listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney from the nation's capital in Washington, D.C.
We're back. We are joined, as we have the privilege of being each week, by our friend and colleague Diana West. Diana is, of course, the author of two superb books, Death of the Grown-Up and American Betrayal, The Secret Assault on Our Nation's Character. You can find her writings these days in a marvelous website, dianawest.net. She is a longtime syndicated columnist who has periodically been publishing of late at the Daily Caller and elsewhere. She is gracious to give us her time. We're always delighted to talk with her. Diana West, welcome back.
Oh, wonderful to be back, Frank.
So, you have been pointedly discussing something that we just kicked around a bit with our previous guest, Joe DeGeneva, namely that what is really shaping up now in terms of these serial revelations about the efforts to deny Donald Trump the presidency in the first instance and then to destroy his presidency once he won it, amounts to a coup, in your words, with an interesting red thread to it. Talk about your conclusions based on the evidence to date.
Yes, well, certainly it's an attempted coup. It has all the hallmarks of a conspiracy, a secret plan involving a number of people inside and outside the highest levels of government. As far as the red thread, this is a thought experiment that I am pursuing, because when we talk about these things, there is this sort of sterile and, if you will, colorless language that we use to describe the principles. For example, Christopher Steele is a former MI6 intelligence agent for British intelligence. However, he is also, according to reports in English papers, he was a very hardcore leftist in college. He was described as an avowedly left-wing student with CND credentials, for example, CND being the old Campaign for Nuclear Disarmament, very hard left, Marxist-infiltrated organization. And he was known as a confirmed socialist in regard to his activities in the Cambridge Debating Society. So, for example, talking about him simply as a former British intelligence agent leaves out a lot of the possible motivation here, particularly when you combine it with his opposite number, Nellie Orr, whom we might want to pick up with.
Yeah, well, Nellie Orr, of course, is a character who has turned up partly in her own right at Fusion GPS, but also because of her marriage to a senior Trump administration, amazingly enough, I guess Obama holdover more accurately, but nonetheless, man who's been serving in senior positions during President Trump's administration of the Justice Department. So tell us about Nellie and her background.
Well, she is extremely important and has, again, usually is described in the media as a Russian, an academic expert, a PhD with a Russian specialty. Again, this very sterile language that doesn't give us any sense of how she thinks. So what I've done at great length is an analysis of her publicly available writings. And what these reveal very clearly after you kind of spend a lot of time following the academic trends and such in terms of the past decades, I find she is what is known as a revisionist social historian, a follower of a school known as the revisionists in the 1970s and 80s that were essentially there to normalize the Soviet Union, to downplay the crimes of Stalin, to minimize the human suffering as a means of combating what they call the totalitarian model, which would essentially be academic speak for cold warriors who studied the Soviet Union. The essentially revisionists are the anti-cold warriors. They are the pro-Soviets. They are engaged in a form of research that was sanctioned by the Soviet Union in those days. In order to do research in Soviet Union in the 1970s and 80s, of course, you had to be approved by Soviet censors. So this is the cauldron from which her own academic orientation is found. And I think it's very important to track it.
Well, Diana, nobody does it better than you. But I did want to ask you about another topic, and that is the growing assertiveness of what I think is best described as the red-green axis, the hard left, the Marxists, if you will, communists, socialists, and the Islamists or Sharia supremacists. The apotheosis of this nexus at the moment, it seems to me, is Representative Keith Ellison, who, of course, is not only the chairman of the Progressive Caucus in the Congress, the first Muslim elected to the House of Representatives, and a very long track record of affinity for and association with Muslim Brotherhood front organizations, but he's also the number two man in the Democratic National Committee, involved in putting money into races around the country and promoting, it appears, not only leftists, but I fear Sharia supremacist Muslims as well. Talk a little bit about what this other element, another thread, if you will, is as you see it at the moment in the person of Keith Ellison and more broadly.
Yes, well, I think that he is a very reasonable choice for poster boy for the red-green axis and also for the same usually very sterile, colorless way of characterizing his own political threads, which would be red and green in this case. When we talk about the Progressive Caucus in Congress, for example, most people don't realize that the kinds of budgets that they pull together and recommend and indeed bring to a vote sometimes have great commonality with the kinds of budgets you would see coming out of the Socialist Party or even the Communist Party in America. I mean, these correlations are rarely made. In terms of the red-green axis, I think it's an important piece to understand how old this red-green axis really is. If we go back to, say, 1980, when the Reagan administration is coming in, this was the time when there was great consciousness brought to the fore by a very excellent reporter named Claire Sterling, who demonstrated the nexus of Soviet involvement in Islamic, we weren't thinking of it in those terms, terrorism. This would have been a red-green axis exemplified in her book, The Terror Network, which explained the connections between the Soviet and Bloc countries of the day, Eastern European countries, and their security services, and this roiling, mobilizing Islamic terror networks, the PLO being the very big one of the day, and others that were brought together and indeed weaponized. And I don't think that we should see a break in this. I think we should be looking for more threads that show the continuation of these networks.
Well, and specifically, I would argue that the training that the Soviets provided to the Muslim Brotherhood in running covert operations, stealthy penetration, subversion, that sort of thing is very much an adjunct to what you were describing and Claire did in her book about terror. Lastly, and very quickly, Diana West, another manifestation of this peculiar joining of forces is Linda Sarsour's endorsement of Chelsea Manning as a United States Senate candidate. What are your thoughts on this combination?
I don't know who gives more to whom. In this case, this one has to kind of develop more. There's a farcical element to this that I am very struck with. I think that when we're looking at red-green axes or axes, I think that, you know, the Keith Ellison is already empowered. The continuation of this will have many manifestations. This seems to be another. These threads need to be further investigated and wrapped up, because I think that the less we understand how they work together, the more we are likely to be absolutely destroyed by them.
Right. We will be doing a lot of that thread unraveling with you in the years to come. I'm quite confident, Diana West. Thank you for your time today. As always, it's wonderful talking with you, and I look forward to doing so next week. Next up, we will speak with Peter Husey, one of the country's preeminent authorities on matters involving nuclear forces. That and more right after this.